everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. And let's just have a little nice talk here. It's a very fresh September day. And it's funny because I've been talking all summer about how hot it is and how pleasantly hot it is. It's never really been brutal, although last week we had some pretty hot weather. And now all of a sudden, just like everybody's promising, here it is, cool, fresh. I have to wear long sleeves, and it's lovely. I love the seasons. I love the change in weather, and I think this is about my favorite time of all, cool, fresh air, not too cold, not too anything, just lovely. And it's also a favorite time for me because this is the harvest season. You may have heard people talking about the harvest moon. So we've got this big moon sitting in the sky last night and tonight. And this is the time when all of the farms and gardens are really overflowing with my favorite foods, fruits and vegetables. I really like to go out on the east end of Long Island right about now and drive out to all of the organic farms out there. It's a lovely drive, and I love to bring back the squashes that are available, especially the red curry squash. That's about one of my favorites, and I like to use that around Thanksgiving time, but we're not quite there yet. Okay, so here we are. It's September 9th, 2014, and I want to bring on my first guest, and we've got Talia Furman here, and it's a big day for Talia because her first book is being released today, Love Your Body. We're going to be talking about that. She has a degree in nutritional sciences from Cornell University and has contributed to Vegetarian Times, Veg News, Positive Impact, DiseaseProof.com, CrazySexLife.com, PsychologyToday.com, and more, and she lives in Newport Beach. Hi, Talia.
Hi, Karen. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
Well, you know, it's a very, I don't know if you realize this, but I just realized it. I went back to review the transcript of our interview that we had 2 years ago, and I discovered two things are crazy coincidences. One is we spoke exactly 2 years ago today. It was actually September 11th that we spoke. And
are you kidding me? Wow.
And then the other surprise was my second guest today is Miyoko Shinner. I don't know if you know her. But
you interviewed her the same day, 2 years ago.
Yeah, she was on the same show 2 years ago. And I haven't had too many people back for a second or third time. And it's just so crazy that both of you are on this show today. So
life is a crazy adventure.
It is. Anyway, two wonderful people talking about my favorite subject, food. And congratulations. It's a big day today.
Today's a huge day for me, and I couldn't think of a better thing to do than talk to you today.
Well, I'm very flattered.
And 2 years goes by pretty quickly, but a lot can happen in 2 years, and I've been plugging away at this book and loving every second of my job for those 2 years.
Well, you mentioned 2 years ago that you had started working on this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting how life works out, and the book itself, you have to think of the idea first, but the book has taken its own journey and transformed into a project that I'm really proud of. And it did start out as a mostly nutrition book, and the book itself does have, the majority of it does cover my favorite nutrition topics and things that I think are really going to fascinate readers, especially because I discussed some interesting facts about health that my dad hasn't covered. But I really am proud of how the book has taken a positive psychology and mental health and body image turn. Those issues are just as important, and I'm just as thrilled to help people understand how the first step to becoming a healthier human being is taking care of our mental health, and that's the first step. So many people have, you know, emotional eating problems, you know, they eat for emotions, and but if you wake up every day and you want to, you know, eat healthfully, the first step is loving yourself and loving your life and feeling confident that you deserve to take care of your health and not get a disease later on and feel the best that you can feel. All of those things come with your how you feel in your head and your mind. So
it's a great topic, and you know, unfortunately, I think most people have an eating disorder of one kind or another. Not that we would go to a doctor and say I've got an eating disorder, but we've all got issues with food, and we need to work through those issues, whether we're really thin or just perfect or overweight or whatever it is. Everybody's got. Well, most people, I don't want to say everyone, but most people have food issues. And what I love about this book is your voice really comes out in it. It's young, it's energetic, it's refreshing. And then you manage to sneak in some smart science about nutrition in there in a way that I don't think will scare people off.
I appreciate you mentioning that. It was so important for me to use as many scientific references as possible and have them there for anybody to look up on their own. I'm a huge advocate of doing as much digging as possible on what the science has been showing, the latest research, and there's so many fad diets out there, and if I'm going to be, you know, sharing my passion for, you know, what's in a certain food or, you know, the health benefits of, you know, eating, let's say, you know, healthy fats. I wanted to make sure that it was really solid in the science. And I remember writing those, you know, every chapter of the book and just being riveted by what I was reading and the research. And I wanted to make people enjoy that information and find it as fascinating as I did, and I think that just comes out in my voice in the book.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's been frustrating me over the decades, it takes a really long time for the mainstream public to pick up on things, and sometimes they pick up on things that aren't the right things, and that makes things even more complicated. But over time, I think a lot of people have gotten the idea that red meat isn't healthy, and unfortunately, they've decided it's okay to move over to chicken and fish, and a lot of their doctors will tell them to do that, and fish is getting a lot of press as a health food, and I quoted you today on Facebook where you say in the book, do you want to remain quick-witted and dementia-free in your later years? Avoid fish. Can we dish fish?
It's sad that there's, you know, the time that we're living in as human beings is just the waters are just so polluted, and it, you know, let's say, you know, we had fish was clean in the water, you know, thousands of years ago, it would be a completely different story. But it's gross when you think about, wild fish versus factory farm fish. You know, most of the fish we consume comes from a fish farm somewhere. And I was very grossed out with how salmon is produced and the pink dyes that are used, how horrible they are for our bodies, and researching that most of the shrimp that we eat comes from China, and how gross those and polluted the shrimp that we eat here are. It's probably one of the worst things that you can put in your bodies. So I'm glad to share what I know with everybody, and hopefully people will think twice before they order fish at a restaurant or go buy it.
Now, I mentioned before, I think we all have a lot of eating disorders, but we're also a society that is very concerned with how we look. Fashion's very important, and looking good is very important. But what boggles my mind, and probably yours too, is that the best way to look great, inside and outside, is with a healthy diet, and people, most people don't get that or want to go for the quick fix, and it just boggles my mind. Is it just because they don't know?
You know, every human being is different, but I think what's fascinating is that everything in life is interconnected. And the more we feel great about how we look on the outside, the more confidence that we're going to get on the inside, and vice versa. So, you know, if I think a lot of women, you know, even myself, if I for some reason just didn't have a very good day, and I put on makeup and I just have fun with it, it kind of or do my hair, it makes me feel better inside when mm-hmm. I, you know, have fun with fashion and makeup on the outside. And the same connection with food is there's definitely the more, you know, greens you eat, the more wide variety of plant foods you eat, it's just going to show up in your skin. It's going to, you know, obviously you're going to find your ideal weight. All of these things are so connected. And I think that people, you know, once they learn about this, how what we eat will show up in our appearance, I think it's going to change the mentality and the motivation that people have for eating a nutrient-rich, plant-based diet. It's not just about preventing disease, getting cancer or type 2 diabetes. No, this is for young people everywhere. This is going to help you feel amazing today. You're going to have more energy, and you're going to look your best. I always get compliments on the quality and vibrancy of the way my skin looks, and it is not a coincidence that it's 100% related to taking care of myself and exercising in addition to eating the right foods.
It is not a coincidence, and the skin is really reflective of what's going on. It's the largest organ in our body, and people don't even realize that, and it's what we put in our bodies will affect our skin, I think, much more than what we put on our skin. Although that's important, too, but it's more important what we put in our bodies that reflects the health of our skin.
Right, and our attractiveness is based on a multitude of factors, and, you know, how we process meeting people, how we come across to others, our impressions, you know, smiling, all of these factors. So when you are feeling healthy, you have a lot of energy, and your skin looks good, that will come across in your social interactions, and there's a ripple effect. You'll be a happier person. Happiness and smiling is contagious. You'll become, I believe, a more charismatic individual when you're proud of how you eat, you're proud of the way you look. Having a rich social life and looking forward to every day is also healthy. So all of these, I think that's what's very cool about the book, the Love Your Body book, is I talk about how every action we take can improve our lives no matter what you're going through.
Okay, now I love food. It's all about food. I love the food that I eat. And, sometimes my partner Gary and I, we sit on the terrace and we have our meals and we look at the food that we're eating and we just smile at each other and say, you know, we're the luckiest people in the world. Nobody eats as good as we do. Our food is so delicious. It's nutritious. It makes us feel good. And I wanted to say you've got some pretty awesome recipes in here too.
Mm-hmm. The amount of happiness I get from making these recipes and eating them needs to be shared with as many people as possible. they need to know how delicious plant-based healthy food can be. We need to throw the idea that, you know, you have to eat bland foods like wheatgrass and I don't know what else. It's just the reputation of healthy being bland and boring is so far from the truth. We have such an array of spices to use, and spices are so good for our bodies that, you know, to have the creativity to play around with them and make a mouth-watering meal is wonderful. And I know that a lot of people don't like to cook or they're intimidated by it.
Yep.
Like, I think that's a problem. And to create confidence in the kitchen and know that you don't even have to spend that much time or money on creating healthy, delicious meals is an empowering thing. And I think people just need to give it a shot and realize, like, okay, I can try this recipe and let's see how it will come out. And I did have a lot of fun creating the recipes, but I made them very, you know, it's a lot easier to follow a recipe than it is to create it. So I hope people feel the same way I do about how absolutely mouthwatering and enjoyable healthy food can taste.
You know, I didn't mention before that you're the daughter of my favorite doctor, Dr. Joel Fuhrman. And, of course, you have access to a lot of great resources and information that's helped you become so knowledgeable about nutrition. But you also mentioned in your book that your dad likes to cook, and he's great at preparing food. And it made me stop for a minute because he does so much right now, and he's so busy. And I thought, when does he ever have time to make meals? And apparently he does.
He's loved to cook my entire life. And you're right, it doesn't happen as often as I or the rest of my family would like, because he's such a creative cook. Like, he doesn't measure anything. He'll just throw things in the blender and make a salad dressing, and it will be the most delicious salad you've ever tasted. And I actually haven't had one of those salads for quite some time because I live on the West Coast and he's always traveling and lives on the East Coast now. But, man, did I just get these vivid flashbacks to his amazing, amazing salad. And he has so much energy. He will put, like, all of these ingredients, all of these, like, vegetables and even sometimes fruits into a salad, make a creamy dressing, and he'll toss this huge salad in like a big bag or something, so all the dressing gets all over it. And it's a really healthy dressing with we usually make nut based dressings and put in spice. Oh, they're just so good. I could talk about them all day.
Well, I'm sure he doesn't have a lot of time to cook these days, but the fact that he does just shows that anybody who's busy can find some time to learn how to put some delicious foods together. You just have to want to.
You have to want to, and it's honestly never been easier. We didn't have the high-powered blenders, food processors, the convenience of just putting something in the oven immediately, you know, all of these modern life conveniences. We can just run to a farmer's market or a health food store, pick up the ingredients we need. We can even order online. And so it doesn't have to be difficult, and you can have fun. I like to cook while I'm listening to audiobooks or listening to my favorite upbeat music, even sometimes a movie if I've made the recipe many times before and don't need to pay attention as much, you know. But it's a really pleasurable creative activity that you should enjoy, you know, with other people too. So make it fun.
Make it fun. Now, one of the things that I like in one of your bean dishes is you add a little tahini, and it makes a wonderful creamy background to all of the great flavors.
Huge fan of tahini, and nutritional yeast and tahini together is amazing. You can make a creamy sauce that, you know, it's going to taste like dairy.
I know. It's
so good.
Such a great combination. What are people missing that don't know the tahini nutritional yeast experience?
And then throw in some Italian spices in there, or even tomato sauce. I love Italian food. And then, you know, let's say you add mushrooms and spinach and get some veggies in there. And I love it. But also, people who aren't used to eating this way, they can start loving it too. I think it's scary for people to change their habits and their routines, and our taste buds are completely programmed to the foods that we grew up on and are used to eating. But even if you grew up on a conventional American diet, our taste buds are able to change. It's just, you know, trying new foods and making them on a regular basis, and then slowly you'll start to crave the new foods just as much as you started to crave the old foods that you enjoyed. So I think it's really important going into this to have an open mind, and just sometimes you need a little bit of a push to tell yourself, you know, I'm just going to try this, If I don't like it, that's okay. I'm going to keep, trying some new recipes to figure out what I do like more, and then, eat healthier plant foods more and more. It doesn't have to be all or nothing either. My specialty of my dad is he helps get his patients better from type 2 diabetes, autoimmune disorders, that sort of thing. That's a stricter plant-based diet to do so, but I want to, also relay the message that especially young people who are healthy, it doesn't have to be all or nothing to begin with. Just try eating more fruits and vegetables, try enjoying healthy fats in the form of avocados, nuts and seeds, and chia seeds, and flax seeds, all of these things. And I was fascinated by all of the micronutrients, but like vitamins and minerals, phytochemicals, these little chemicals inside each of these foods, and the different composition of nutrients in every single plant food that makes them so powerfully disease protective and great for every aspect of how we feel. And it's no coincidence that my dad also has so much energy, and when you meet him, he is one of the most passionate people you know. I totally understand why that is. And to have a role model like that and a dad is just something that is probably one of the greatest gifts I will ever have in my entire life. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to be able to approach this in a new way.
Well, I'm sure your mother and father are both very proud of you, especially today with your book coming out. And what's important about it is young people are not, it's probably not on their radar as much as it is with people who are older, chronic diseases, heart disease, diabetes, cancer. You know, when I was in my 20s, I wasn't really thinking about those things. And that's the time when you should be, I don't want to say thinking about diseases, but thinking about making your body the best that it can be, and that will only make it better for you as you get older. You're going to look great as you age, and nobody wants to get ill. And the best time to prepare is as soon as you're conceived, obviously, but you don't have much choice there. And then a lot of us, when we're being raised, don't have as much choice in what we're eating. But as soon as we're young adults, we can totally take over what we're eating and how we're taking care of ourselves.
And this is the time, and health care in America has never been more expensive. And I can't stress enough that, getting a disease later in your life and having, to spend so much money, go to a hospital, get shot, there's a lot of physical and emotional pain. Taking care of yourself is also it's not just a gift to yourself, it's a gift to everybody else in your life, because to have a family member who has a serious health problem is also emotionally taxing on the people who care about you. So I also view taking care of yourself as a form of caring about other people. And when you have more energy and you're able to accomplish more at work, and certainly eating a plant-based healthy diet is going to make us feel better than if we ate, a fit conventional American diet. Just every single day, people will tell me once they've improved their diet how much better they feel every single day in the present. So I really cannot stress enough that you think that you feel okay now, you think you're just getting by, but maybe you feel like you need coffee every day, or maybe you feel like a little sluggish or tired, and then all of a sudden you feel lighter after you eat. You can eat a lot on a plant-based diet. If you're eating a big salad or stew or whatever it is, you can eat a lot of food, but you can still feel like after you eat the meal, I feel really good. I feel refreshed. I feel like I have a lot of energy. It's not weighing me down. It's a very different eating experience than somebody who just had a hamburger. It's just not like that action in the present has a huge effect on the present, not just about preventing diseases later in life, although that's very catastrophic.
Hmm. Do you have any good stories of people's reaction to your message?
Any good stories about people's reaction to my message all the time. I would say the best thing in the world for me is when I hear from somebody who's about, 12, 13 years old, and they're just like, Talia, you're helping me out so much. I'm getting my parents to change, and I feel so like you're such a role model to me, and I'm so excited that I started so young. There's a lot of really smart preteens and teenagers out in the world who are just excited to eat this information up, and the fact that they can, start eating healthily when they're so young is probably the best news and story that I have. And just to be able to go through my emails and read these stories of appreciation, I don't think that I could have a better job ever.
Okay, now what's next? You've got the book.
Next?
It's released today. What's in Talia's future? So that when I talk to you 2 years from now, we can say, yep, did that.
Healthy makeup. I love natural beauty, and I'm excited to be doing research and creative writing on the chemicals in cosmetics and how they affect our bodies. And so basically what we put on our skin and how to create makeup and cosmetics that are high quality and actually good for us. So that there's always going to be recipes, and my website, you're always going to see more articles on health and nutrition. And so my website's always going to be there, and I get a high from my creative writing. So I would say makeup and continuing my passion for nutrition.
That sounds pretty good. I had a friend recently who was asking me or telling me that she had discovered that all these horrible things that were in the products that she had been using, and then we started having a dialogue back and forth about what kinds of creams and lotions and products you can use on your body. But I always like to say, if you can't eat it, you don't really want to put it on you.
No, and there's really not a makeup product that you can actually eat and and it would work.
I know. You don't want to eat your mascara, but you don't want it to have toxic ingredients in it to put it on your body.
Talk about, like, there's actually lead that's been found in some animal products, but there's lead that's been found in makeup. That's not okay, and people should know about that.
Mm-hmm. That's not okay. Whew. Okay. Yes. Well, I'm very excited about this book, and I hope lots of young women and girls read it and learn a lot and get smart and healthy and feel good inside and out, because that'll just make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for having me on, Karen. It was really wonderful to talk to you and share my message with you and your audience.
I'm sending you a big virtual hug.
Yes, thank you, Karen. I'm sending you a virtual hug as well.
Okay, take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. All right. That was Talia Furman, and you can find out more about Talia at taliafurman.com. Shall I spell that? TaliaFurman.com. Love your body. Sounds really good to me. Okay, well, we're working on that concept, breathing in, breathing out, and thinking about loving our bodies. Let's take a break. Okay, and now we're going to come back and talk about vegan cheese. Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food here on September 9th, 2014, a nice, cool September day. And I'm going to bring on my next guest, Miyoko Shinner. How are you today, Miyoko?
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
How are you?
Thank you so much. You must be so busy.
I am. And the last time I saw you was when you were delivering that wonderful performance down in San Jose, that duo,
Swinging Gourmets.
The Swinging Gourmet.
Yes.
That was so much fun.
Thank you for coming to that. You know, while we're going down memory lane here, I wanted to mention a couple of things. I already mentioned this in the first part of the show, but 2 years ago I had you on the program. We talked about your wonderful new book at the time, Artisan Vegan Cheese. And that was 2 years ago it was September 11, 2012. And I also had Tanya.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Yeah, just like 2 years ago, exactly. The time is kind of crazy.
I couldn't remember when it was exactly. Okay.
And, well, I looked at it because I wanted to refresh my mind and see what we spoke about and call you on a few things if I needed to. But Talia Furman was also on that show, and it's like the only time in 5.5 years I've been doing this program I had the same two people on the same day twice in a row.
I remember that, and so when I saw the post this morning, I thought, oh, she's posting something from 2 years ago. I thought maybe my eyes were you know, deceiving me, but I guess not.
No,
okay,
I didn't remember it until now, and I don't know what it all means, but I don't believe in coincidences, and I'm just enjoying it.
There must be some deep meaning to that,
meaning. The other thing I wanted to mention, we've talked before about your history in the vegan world, and you've really been a trendsetter, starting things before anyone else was doing them. And I remember Now and Zen, the restaurant in San Francisco. And my brother was just telling me that he has a crayon picture that he drew while sitting in your restaurant. I guess you had paper and crayons as tablecloth.
We did. We had it. We always had a table. There was a tablecloth, and there was a piece of butcher paper that covered the table over the tablecloth. And we always had crayons, and people could draw pictures while they were waiting or whatever. And sometimes you would see the most amazing artwork on the butcher paper, and we would just sometimes we would hang it up and do like a little, you know, butcher paper art show in the restaurant.
Well, my brother hung his up in his bedroom, and it's there till this day.
Oh, that's funny. That is funny.
But, you know, I think all of that, it's important, tying together art and food and beauty.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Absolutely.
So the last time we talked, you had come out with this wonderful book, and you were showing all of us how to make our own cheese. We talked a little bit about manufacturing the cheese, and here you are 2 years later, and it's happening.
It really is happening. You know, and 2 years ago when I did speak to you, I think, you know, people were saying, well, why did you write a book instead of just starting another company? And because I'd had companies in the past and run my own businesses in the past, you know, I just wasn't, like, thrilled. The idea of starting a new company just wasn't quite as appealing. So I didn't really picture it myself doing what I'm doing right now. But, you know, it did. But enough people kept asking me, why don't you just make cheese? I mean, I love your book, but I don't want to go through the hassle. Mm-hmm. I'm just never going to make anything in it. I'd rather just buy it.
Mm-hmm. You really had to do it.
Yes.
No regrets yet, right? Everybody's so excited about this product.
No regrets. No, absolutely. Yeah, we're really excited about it.
Yeah, you know, I tell people, I've been saying this for years, people are probably tired on this show of me saying it, but I'm always saying find your kitchen, get into your kitchen, make your food. I know that you make most things by scratch, and I think for the most part, our basic foods, we should. Cheese is a little complicated.
That's right. It is. It does take, you know, and that's why most people don't make, I mean, there are cheese making classes in the dairy world all over, but most people don't embark down, you know, on that path because it's just very detailed. There's a lot. It's a real commitment. And as I mentioned before, patience is the most important ingredient in any kind of process that involves culturing or fermentation or aging, you know. So it takes a while.
Yeah, so culturing and fermentation, this is the part that gives these cheeses, all cheeses, their unique flavor and tang and body. But we're dealing with microscopic little living things, and they can either go your way or another way. And you were talking about this the first time, controlling the temperature and controlling everything you need to make a consistent and safe product.
That's right. And so that's something we had to explore really, really deeply and thoroughly before we started this company. Because we know we do want to grow. We don't want to just be, you know, selling at farmers markets. We want to be a global company eventually. And so we wanted to make sure that we were producing something that was safe. And so we actually hired a couple of cheese consultants who have been absolutely fabulous, cheese consultants to the dairy industry, who helped us really set those parameters and figure out how to, you know, safe practices. And we spent a lot of time developing what's called a HACCP plan, which stands for Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Point. So we would have all of our controls in place. So not just temperature, but measuring the pH and the water activity and all of this stuff, so we can be sure that we are producing a safe product and that it's a consistent product. So we're not just winging it each time, you know, which is wonderful. It can be very artisanal, you know, kind of winging it in your own kitchen. And as long as you're, you know, your surfaces are clean and all of that, you can generally have a safe product. But every single time, your cheese is going to come out a little bit different because of all, you know, lack of these controls. So when you so when you mass produce, you need to have that in place.
I have some property in Costa Rica. It's just a jungle. I haven't done anything with it. But when I go and visit, I visit friends and see a variety of different things. And one of my French friends, he was showing me someone who was making cheese, and we went to this person's house, and it just scared me. He just had racks and racks of these cheeses sitting out in the open air inside an open room, and I thought, I'm glad I'm not eating or wanting to eat these cheeses. I'm sure they're fine, but there was no control there, no sanitary control, no temperature control. It was, whoa, out of control.
But, you know, it's interesting because that's really how man's been making cheese for thousands of years.
Yes.
Even in Europe today, you know, there are people, and I'm not a French speaker, I'm trying to remember the proper, there's a proper French term for the person who ages the cheeses. And so they typically, you know, they often might have a natural cave, and their sole job, they don't actually make cheese. All they do is age it, and they make sure that the you know, but they're doing it in caves, and that's how people have been doing it for many, many, many eons. So it's not, if you think about the kind of bacteria that's in cheese or any kind of fermented product, you know, the idea of having something that's cultured where the pH is low enough, and you have a low enough water activity, those are going to be things that are going to prevent the wrong stuff from growing. So it's really controlling all of that. So there are some wonderful things that are growing in all fermented foods, from yogurt to kimchi to pickles, that are going to prevent the bad pathogens from growing.
Right, in different areas, when we ferment things, it takes the bacteria that's in the area. So
that's right.
Now, you're in a controlled facility, and maybe that won't be as affected with the environment outside.
I think there's always going to be airborne bacteria and airborne yeast that are going to get onto things. But we do have, you know, but we're not, you know, sterilizing the air or anything, but we do have a very, very clean facility, and visitors will be able to see it when we open up our retail shop sometime next year. We have these huge, beautiful picture windows that look into both the production facility where we're making the cheese, as well as the aging room. We have the state-of-the-art aging room where we'll have up to 10,000 units of cheese on racks aging. And so you'll be able to look into it and see all these beautiful rounds of cheese aging in there. You will be able to see it, and I think people will be impressed how clean and sanitary our facility is, because we've really taken all precautions to do that. But despite that, there's still air, and anytime you have any kind of air, there's going to be some form of bacteria and yeast. So you can't remove all of that. So some of that will be there.
And it's good.
Yeah, that's
a good
right.
thing. Now, let's talk about the cheese. So I'm on your Miyoko's Kitchen website looking at some of these beautiful pictures, and I actually got my cheeses today, so I got to sample a number of them. For people out there, Americans especially, who aren't that sophisticated when it comes to cheese and are mostly American cheese slice kind of people, they may not be aware of some of the traditions that are used with cheeses, and a number of your products kind of go along with some traditional ways of enhancing the cheese flavor or flavoring the cheese or kind of, quote, packaging the cheese. I thought we might talk about some of that.
Yeah.
So you have the Mount Vesuvius Black Ash, which is stunning. Just to look at is stunning. But it's something, this using an ash on the outside of a cheese is something that's been done for a long time.
It has. It's been done for centuries in Europe. And there are some American cheese makers, such as Cowgirl Creamery, that feature ash as part of the, you know, as one of the ingredients in the cheese. So there are many, many other companies doing it. Another treatment of of using ashes, they'll often use ash because it makes the surface more alkaline. And it helps certain molds such as Penicillium candidum, which is the white mold on Camembert and Brie, helps that to grow better. Hmm. So a lot of your Camemberts and Bries will have that sprinkled on the surface beforehand. So that's been it's just natural vegetable ash, or it can be from from wood or vegetable matter, some sort of green matter that gets turned into a carbon state. Mm-hmm. So that's a very traditional ingredient that's been used for centuries.
Well, some people also like to. Yeah. Well, some people think they should also take in a little charcoal every day because it cleans the body. So it's not a bad thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, apparently
it's also good
pulls toxins out of your body. Mm-hmm. Is what I understand. Activated, charcoal or carbon. People do take that in water just to pull the toxins out of the body. So
right. But yeah. It's it just has a lovely contrast with the creamy whiteness of the cheese. Beautiful.
Yes.
And then the other one I tried was the country style Herbe de Provence, and I have my own personal love affair with the Provence region. I lived in the Provence for 4 years. I love the Herbe de Provence, and this is another traditional way to prepare cheese.
It is, yes. I really borrowed from tradition, from mostly European traditions, and then but used vegan ingredients to produce cheeses that are somewhat reminiscent of really very traditional and artisanal cheeses.
And, in some ways I understand how we want to make products that are like the products that we've been familiar with. On the other hand, I think that all of these lovely vegan foods that have come along over the years are unique and individual and should stand on their own.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some people might whine and say, why do you want to have cheese? It tastes just like cheese. Why don't you eat cheese?
Right.
And they say that about meat analogs, too. And, all of that is just nonsense.
We don't necessarily become vegan because we don't, it's not because we hated meat or cheese. It's because we were trying to we did it for another reason. It didn't mean that we didn't like those flavors. Mm-hmm. And I don't see any problem with enjoying reliving those flavors. I mean, it's not just, is it really cheese or is it that sensation of something that's fatty and rich and creamy mm-hmm. that you can have with your wine on a Friday night when you're trying mm-hmm. to unwind or something? I think there is an occasion for all of these things. I myself don't eat my cheese on a daily basis because I'm more of a kind of a beans and rice and veggie kind of gal. But I certainly want to have sort of an elegant spread of cheeses, for special occasions and be able to enjoy that without harming my body or the environment or animals.
Yeah, well, even when I lived in France and the few times that I would go to one of these outrageously expensive, incredible restaurants, unfortunately I was always a guest because I couldn't afford to go to them. But when you would come to the cheese course, which I wouldn't get, they would slice you very small taste of a variety of different cheeses. You'd never really have a half a pound of cheese.
It was no.
For that rich, luxurious, lovely flavor.
That's really what it is. It's just enjoying a bit of luxury, mm-hmm. That's really what it's for, and that's sort of the meaning of it. And, I definitely have an interest in coming out with a line of more everyday cheeses, your Swiss and your cheddar and the kind of stuff that you put on a pizza, the mozzarella or whatever, mm-hmm. Grilled cheese sandwich. But I really wanted to set the bar high when we rolled out our product and mm-hmm. come out with just a unique line of just stellar artisanal products that would show people, not just vegans, but
everybody.
Mm-hmm.
These are cheeses.
Mm-hmm. You can do this, and you can do this with plants.
Yeah, and there's only real ingredients in your cheeses.
Thank you for noticing.
There's only real ingredients.
Yes.
There's no gums
That's
or anything.
Right. Yeah, yeah. There's no, I mean, you know, if you look at a lot of the plant-based or vegan cheeses on the market, the first ingredient in a lot of them is oil. Mm-hmm. And then the second ingredient is some sort of starch. And so you're paying whatever, you know, people say, oh, our cheeses are expensive because they're $10 to $12 for one round. But, you know, when you go out and buy one of these vegan cheeses, you're paying $4.99 for oil and starch and gums.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not paying for real food. You're paying for...
And not only are these foods real, but they're mostly organic.
That's correct. We are certified organic. All of our products except for the ash. The ash is made from organic cashews as well, but that product is not certified organic because the ash can't be. So, but everything else is.
Beautiful. Okay, I had two more products, and one of them is the Fresh Loire Valley in a fig leaf. And what a beautiful thing. And something I love about nature is how it gives us everything we need. I love the foods that come packaged. For example, I like to travel with a papaya. It's just easy, and all you have to do is slice it open, and there it is. It's already packaged. A banana is packaged. You don't need to wrap it and wrap it and wrap it and wrap it. And then we have these beautiful leaves, like fig leaves, perfectly to wrap a cheese, and that's another tradition.
It is another tradition, and I love fig leaves. People don't usually, you know, in this country, think about using fig leaves for culinary purposes. They often use grape leaves, but not fig leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But fig leaves are extremely aromatic and flavorful, and they impart this sort of sweet, floral, perfumey essence to the cheese that is just incomparable.
Yeah, that I love that.
I
noticed that right away, that fruity sweetness mixed in with the tang. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah.
Now, can you eat the fig leaf?
You can. And it's not just a plain raw fig leaf. It's one that's been brined in a brine made out of wine. And, of course, it's an organic wine that we, organic vegan wine that we got from Northern California as well.
Well, you're in the right place to do this because
we are. Yeah,
that's where all the good organic plants are growing. And then the last one that I tried was the cheddar. Let's see, I'm looking for the actual name.
Is it the Aged English Sharp Farmhouse?
It was the Aged English Sharp Farmhouse. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, we can't really use words like cheddar. Or we can't even say cheese, just so you know. We're not supposed to because they are called standards of identity. And they can only be used for products made out of dairy milk. So either, you know, goat's milk or cow's milk, but not from cashew milk.
Wow.
So we have had to come up with our own name to describe these beautiful products, and that is cultured nut product.
Mm.
So next time you smile for the camera, say cultured nut product.
Well, I will. Cultured nut product. But you know what?
Yes.
We need to work on getting the cheese to be a little more, open-minded. You know, just like we're fighting for rights for individuals, for freedoms, I think cheese needs to be a broader term.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, just like soy milk at one time, they had the same battle, and they eventually won. So it's very, very possible that eventually we will be able to call our product cheese. But right now, you know, everybody knows we're talking about a cheese alternative product. We just, you know, try to avoid using that word in the media.
Wow.
When we're, you know, we're fine for other people to let other people call it cheese. We just can't do it ourselves.
So
kind of funny.
But the ones that I've seen in the store, the ones made with all the artificial ingredients that don't taste very good, they all say cheese on them, soy cheese, or they say cheese alternative. Is that what they say?
Yeah, you know, it's a California law ruling actually for manufacturers in California, and there are lots of companies that just aren't on the radar. California just doesn't have the bandwidth to go out and shut down every manufacturer that uses the word cheese on their packaging.
Mm.
But we just wanted to play it safe. We just didn't want to take that risk, so we didn't.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that Aged English Sharp Farmhouse nut milk loveliness. And it has a a drier, firmer texture than the other cheeses that I tried, and it had that that drierness consistency that you get in those other things that we don't want to talk about anymore.
That's right, that was what I strive for. We wanted to have a cultured nut product that really was reminiscent of an aged English sharp cheddar, because nothing like that exists on the market.
Right.
So we, without using the word cheddar, we came up with aged English sharp farmhouse, which, you know, without saying using the word cheddar, you knew immediately what we were trying to do, which tells me that, hey, we kind of did okay there.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is aged. That's one of the rounds that gets aged for, I can't tell you exactly how long, because that's proprietary. But anyway, it gets aged for weeks and weeks and weeks in our aging room. And so if you come and visit, you'll be able to see them.
Oh,
there.
Yes, I will, definitely. Yeah. And I was planning on it, but my schedule got all crazy this month. You have a number of directions to go in now. I know you've got a lot on your plate right now, and you're just getting started. But you mentioned making some of the more everyday cheeses. But also, there are lots of cheeses that are aged for a very, very, very long time. And
yes,
that adds to the expense and the cost, of course. But is there a plan to do that? I mean, how long? What's the longest you've ever aged a cheese yourself?
Over a year.
And what was it like?
It was very, very hard, like a Parmesan.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it gets stronger in flavor. And I have, you can grade it on a microplane. It's so fine. It's sort of granular and, you know, hard. And so there's a lot we can do. But, you know, having to age cheese for a year takes up a lot of space.
Yep.
So it's not real estate that we have right now. So we're, you know, but that is definitely an interest that I have somewhere down the line. I would love to do that. Another thing that we want to roll out in spring of next year is a bloomy rind cultured nut product. And, so if some of you listeners may not know what a bloomy rind cheese is, but those are the cheeses that have that white mold on the outside like Camembert and Brie. And so we have one that's phenomenal, and it's, you know, it gets, as it gets older, the flavor gets stronger and gooier in the middle. And our cheese consultants are the ones that we hired. These are their words. They tasted it and they said, I would buy this. This is just like Brie.
Wow.
So that was, to me, the highest compliment.
Yeah.
So we want to roll that one out. That one's a little finickier than what we're doing right now.
I'm just curious what those consultants thought about what you were doing.
I think they thought we were crazy initially, and now they love us, and we love them. They're phenomenal. And I predict they're going to be vegan because they're really interested in it.
They've had
many meals with us and ask all these questions about veganism, and they're just so interested.
Wow.
And they've done so much to help promote our product as well, too, to omnivores. Like when they go speaking, they served our cheese to a big group of people at a food festival. And the response was phenomenal. People didn't believe it was vegan.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to the day when a movie comes out and the vegan Miyoko's vegan cheese wins over the French vegan cheese, just like what was that movie with the California wines versus the French wines?
Oh yes, yeah, that was Stag's Leap, I believe, years ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, we have a minute left, Miyoko. Where can people get your cheese? They're probably salivating now after we've spoken about them. So,
well, you can go to miyokoskitchen.com, www.miyokoskitchen.com, and you can order online right now. We're taking pre-orders, and shipments will start on September 22nd. We are also going to be in stores. We're just setting up distribution with various distributors throughout the country, so you will begin to see it in stores over the next few months. That's going to take some time, so the surest way to get it right now is to go to our website. And that, once again, is miyokoskitchen.com.
And these cheeses, when they get to the stores, will likely be in the cheese section, right? Not in a
No, we're going to have them in the alternative cheese
section
along with all the others.
Okay.
And that's where we want to be. That's, you know, because that's where the vegans go. And we're right now, we want to promote it, first of all, to our core audience, the people that have supported us and bought my books and so on, and who come out to hear me talk, you know, various venues around the country. And those are the people we want to satisfy first.
That's
and then
nice.
We'll spread our wings and get out to everybody else.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you for talking to me today, Miyoko. I'm so excited. I'm so glad you're doing this. Time marches on, and all good things are happening.
Well, I'll talk to you maybe another 2 years, Karen.
No, I'm going to come into your facility
sooner
than
that. Okay, great. I was talking about on your radio show.
Yes,
you'll have
absolutely.
To schedule us again with Talia Furman.
Absolutely,
so.
September anyway. In 2 years.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on your show, Karen.
You're welcome, and thanks for the cheese. Oh, the nut,
all right.
The nut product, yes.
The nut culture
the
nut product.
Culture
okay.
Nut product.
All right. All right. Bye-bye from one nut to another. Bye.
Oh, bye. Okay, that was Miyoko Shinner. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Join me at responsibilityandliving.com and have a delicious week.